because we're coming to what's called the Olivet Discourse, and I kind of introduced that a little bit before. It's a discussion. It's one of the longest teachings Jesus does in the last week of his life. And when he's doing his teaching, he has come in and out of Jerusalem during this last week, so the week of Passover. So there's, you know, all the males and stuff, they're in Jerusalem. They're going to have the big Passover sacrifice there at the end of the week. And Jesus is going, actually, we know he's going to actually die and be our Passover lamb. And so he's going to become the actual, what the Passover lamb symbolized, he's going to become the real offering of that. And in this time, he's already told the Jewish religious organization that, you know, your house will be left to you desolate. In other words, what he's told them is, you've given your final rejection, and God's presence, God's power, all of that, he's going to remove all of those things. God's done this in the past. In Old Testament, we've seen that actually take place. And so Jesus is telling them this, and we saw that the disciples themselves, they kind of question that. They look at it, and they kind of think, look at the magnificence of this temple. And how could this not be anymore? Like, how could this just not be? And how would God let that happen? And Jesus begins to teach them about it. He says, not one stone will be left upon another. And so as he does that, the disciples do something really interesting. They follow him out. So they leave Jerusalem. They leave the city itself. They cross over what's called the Kidron Valley. And I'm going to talk about that valley a little bit. And he's going to go up onto the Mount of Olives. It overlooks Jerusalem. So if you're standing on the Mount of Olives, you just kind of overlook and see Jerusalem through all that. You see the temple, you see all these things. So that's kind of important to have that picture in your mind. Because what they've done is, you know, he's told them what's going to happen to this temple, and now they're up on this mountain, and they can kind of look over, and they can see that city, they can see that temple, and it's still in their mind, how's this going to happen? You know, we've got to really do this. And so on that mount, there's some significance about why that particular mountain. It's called the Mount of Olives because of the olive groves that will grow there. And so it's just kind of one of those things. Now, in the Olivet Discourse, there's something I want you to know about. The Mount Olivet was mentioned a few times in the Old Testament. One of those times, as the Bible says in 2 Samuel 15:30, David went up by the ascent of Mount of Olivet and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went. Who in here knows what this is talking about? When did David leave the city of Jerusalem, go up to the Mount of Olives, and he was weeping, he covered his head as he went? There's this a crisis time in David's life. Does anybody know when this took place? Not when his child died. That's a really good...
Absalom took over, and he was going to...
So when Absalom took over, there was rebellion inside his family, and Absalom had won the heart of the people, and he's overthrowing his own father, and this is the when David's leaving Jerusalem on that, and eventually Absalom, there's going to be a battle, and Absalom's going to die, and David's going to weep over that as well, but this is that time that goes up. So this is kind of the mention here of Mount Olivet. We don't know much about it. We just kind of hear at this time. We see a significance. There's something important is happening here. Then in the book of Zechariah, chapter number 14, verse 4, the Bible here, the prophet's kind of looking on down the future, and he's seeing the coming of the Messiah. We know the Messiah now to be who? Jesus. Now, they just know this is sometime way off in the future. This is before Jesus was born, hundreds of years before Jesus was born. The prophet knows he's got to tell people about this. This is what God's given him, but he doesn't have all the facts. But notice what it says about him, the Messiah coming. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of what?
Olives.
Which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west. So this has not happened yet. Jesus has stood on the Mount Olives, but the mountain didn't divide, right? When does that actually happen? When he returns again in his second coming. This is when Jesus comes back to do battle. This is when, you know, after we're taken out 7 years after that, Jesus returns. So we've seen two significant things about this mount. And right here, Bible says, there shall be a very great valley, and half the mountain shall remove toward the north and half toward the south. So you see something really significant happening with this. So Jesus is now on this mount that has prophetic significance. It has a historical significance to him. He's overlooking this temple, and the disciples have a question for him. Actually, they have two questions for him. In chapters 24 and 25 is Jesus' answer and his response to these questions. These chapters are going to tell us some more about the coming of Jesus Christ. It's going to tell us about his coming, what to look for, events that will take place. This is some really significant stuff. And remember, he's telling them this just days before he's crucified. So verse number 3 would be this. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately. I like that they throw that in there. So Matthew's letting us know, hey, you know, there's public conversations that they had with Jesus, but this one they come privately. He's kind of answered some stuff, but notice that this information is going to come in a one-on-12 conversation, Jesus and his disciples. It's a smaller group. It could be the disciples could be a little bit larger group than just those, because we realize how that name is used. But notice what they say. Tell us, when shall these things be? What shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And so they are recognizing that, hey, we understand you're coming to do something. What do we look for? Because remember, they're still looking for him to set up his kingdom right now. Matter of fact, he's going in a couple of days, he's going to be crucified, right? Then he's going to be buried. What's he going to do 3 days later? Rise again. He's going to spend about 40 days here on earth. He's getting ready to ascend back up into heaven. And the disciples ask him a question. Hey, is this when you're getting ready to establish your kingdom? So they're still looking for all these things to take place. So they have this question. They want to know, when is this going to happen? What's the signs of this? And they recognize something. When Jesus establishes this, this is the end of time as they know it. See, when they're looking at the way the world runs, everything as it is. Verse 4, and Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive who? Mm-hmm. So, Jesus is going to start laying out some things for them. Now, they want to know, when is this going to happen, and what are the signs? And notice that he starts answering the second question first. He doesn't start with, this is when it's going to happen. He starts with, here's some things you need to be looking for. And one of those is a great deception. It's a religious, time of religious deception that's going to take place. Verse number 4, he says, take heed that no man deceive you. Verse 5, he says, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. He's saying that there's going to be, if the disciples are paying attention, he's saying this is going to be an ongoing thing. Obviously, this isn't coming quick, right? Because he said many people will come. That's what? That's future tense. And they will deceive people. That takes what? That's going to take time. So he's letting them know, in essence, hey, there's something that this is not going to happen right now. But here's some things you need to start noticing. There's going to be a rapid increase of people coming up saying that they are the Messiah. And they're not coming and saying they're Jesus Christ of Nazareth, right? They're coming saying they are the Messiah. Remember, the Jews, as a whole, the Jewish organization, the religious rulers, they're crucifying Jesus because they say he's preaching or he's teaching heresy, right? Because he said he's who? He's the Messiah. So they're rejecting the notion that he's the Messiah, but they are looking for a Messiah to come, which means what? They are open to be deceived. Because if you rejected the real one, all that's left that shows up that says, I'm the Messiah, they're all false messiahs, right? So, you know, they are very vulnerable to this thing. So now notice, Jesus says, be not deceived. Keep yourself, guard yourself. And notice that he's telling it to who? To the disciples. And he's warning them not to be deceived. That should be a real indicator to how deceptive these false messiahs can be. Because he's talking to the group that's walked with him for 3 years. He's talking to the group that even in a few days are going to see him, his resurrected body. Him walking with them, talking with them. And he's telling them, as time goes on, be not deceived. Be careful not to be deceived. That should tell all of us something. It's easy. It's not impossible for us to get caught up in something that's not right, something unbiblical. You know, we're not above that. It's one of the reasons that we must learn to really dedicate ourselves to reading the Bible and studying the Bible and making sure that what we believe matches the Bible. Because there's going to be deception there. And I want you to know something. It's not just the Antichrist. Notice he's saying many shall come. There's going to be all sorts of false people coming along and saying, I am Christ and shall deceive many. I want to go to verse number 6. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Remember their question. When's all this stuff going to happen? What do we look for? And he told him, he said, look, there's going to come many people to try to deceive. That gives the idea that time is going to have to pass by, right? Kind of makes you wonder why the disciples still was asking, is this the time that you're going to save your kingdom? But he said, not only that, there's going to be wars. Well, it takes a while for wars to take place, right? You can have a battle in a heated moment, but it takes time for wars to unfold. Not just a war, but what? Wars, plural. Over time, wars are going to unfold. And he says, there's not only going to be wars. He said, but there's going to be rumors of wars. And he says this, don't let this trouble you. This is going to have to take place. It kind of also lets us know something. We're not headed towards a time of peace in this world, right? If you understand your Bible and you really start to look at it, now we should strive for peace and we should try to keep peace. But we got to understand, we're not ever going to put up somebody that's going to be able to cease all wars from happening. In fact, even the Antichrist, when he comes, is going to claim peace, but he's going to lead people to war. War is a part of this world in which we live. I was speaking with Landon earlier. I said, look, you don't have to go to college. He said, you can always join the military. Let them pay for your college. I was going to tell him, like, you don't have to worry about going to war. We would never go to war with anybody. Don't worry about that, you know. No, it would fear. It would cause worry. And inside him, cause worry with his mom if he was just joining up with the military. I said, why? She knows war is a part of life. And we could be in war at any time. And Jesus is saying here, hey, there's going to be an unfolding of things and wars are going to take place. And there's going to continue. But he says this, don't let that shake you. Christians, we should not as Christians be shaken by these things. Bothered? Yes. Shaken by them, fearing, thinking, well, if there was a God, why are these things happening? Well, wait a minute, our God told us that these things would happen. Right? And as we see that unfolding, he says there are going to be wars, rumors of wars. He said, see that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. He says, even as you're seeing false deceivers grow and increase, even as you're seeing wars multiply, he says, that's not the end of everything. Then he goes to verse number 7. He says, nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. In this, I want to go ahead and cover this. I learned a long time ago that a lot of times we don't grasp the idea of some of the words that are still used in the Bible. The word diverse places. Does anyone, I'm not going to ask you if you know what that means. Let me just tell you what that means. So various different, it actually would give the idea of many places. And so sometimes, you know, people read that, they thought that meant in the oceans and places where people died. I actually had a guy ask me about that because he had like a tsunami where like an earthquake kind of takes place under the ocean and that's kind of moves things and that's where your tsunamis come in. And the guy I talked about, he said, look, this is kind of like the end time, isn't it? So, I mean, didn't the Bible say there would be earthquakes in divers places? I said, it means many. it's not just one. But we also have to do something else as Christians that live here in America. We have to realize that we try to view everything in light of our own country. You know, we're waiting for famines to happen in America. And pestilence is happening in America. When all that starts to happen, we'll know that the Lord is coming. But we forget, there is a big world out there, isn't it? And for as long as the world existed almost, there's been wars and rumors of wars. Jesus is saying this is going to continue. But he also says there's going to be famines. And even though, you know, we ate good tonight, there's people living in places that don't have anything to eat. And there's places where there's famine. These things are unfolding. They are taking place. Don't just look for all of this to unfold right where we live. Understand these things are taking place. And so it says pestilences, earthquakes in diverse places. So, and we've seen earthquakes happening all the time. But and we're probably more aware of them now than people would have been, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Because now when something happens, you hear about it. No matter how small of a place something happens at, you hear about it. So we're just seeing the increase. But these things have been happening, taking place. And what Jesus is saying is these things will continue. And you have to see it. But there's going to come a time when there's a great increase of this. If you read the book of Revelation, after we're taken out of here and the plagues and the bowls and the judgments start unfolding, these things come in rapid fire. I mean, this is just multiplied beyond. And so verse number 8 says, these are the beginning of sorrows. You know, sometimes people get up and you see a cloud and people start going, wow, that cloud looks fine. I wonder if that's Jesus coming back. You know, the sky looks weird. I wonder if that's me. We're getting close to the end and stuff. And we just kind of forget about all these things that he said is going to unfold, and there's going to be a continuance of these things. But notice this, he says, these are the beginning of sorrow. When all these things, think about famines, wars, pestilence, that's bad stuff. I'm listening to an audiobook right now about POW in one of the early, one of the world wars, I forget which one it was now, but it was just what they went through in those POW camps. And how those people suffer. And then, not just the POWs, but how cities and villages and countries, how that during times of war, how dangerous, how... If we look on the news right now and look at places where there's wars and battles taking places, where countries are fighting countries, those are dangerous and awful places to live, where people go to bed at night and are waking up by mortar rounds, waking up by battle and gunfire, waking up by these things, and that's where they live. There is no drive down the road to a safer place. You know, these things, think about all of that and how bad all of that is, and then notice we said, these are the beginning of sorrows. One of the things for us as Christians and as a church to remember is, we have a message to take to people, and it's urgent. Because life is not going to go on like it is. And as frustrated as we get with how things are here in America, we got to remember this is one of the best places, the most comfortable places, the most luxurious places. Our people, sometimes our people in poverty live above where other people in the world live. We have a message of hope and of help. We have a message of warning to people that, hey, there's going to come a time when, if you think things are bad now, there's going to come an unfolding of some evils and some horrors and some sorrows that is unheard of up until that time will ever take place. That's why I said before, you know, as Christians, it's easy for us to lose sight of our message and lose sight of our mission and what we're here for. And our purpose is to get out to this community and let them know that there's coming a time when sorrow and troubles and hurts and tribulations and things are coming, and they're real. They're not discomfort. They're not about losing things. I was reading a book by a guy that was a missionary, and he come back here, and He was gone for a while, and his refrigerator had went on the blitz. He lost electricity, and they had to throw away all his food out of the freezer and all this other stuff. And they were talking about, you know, they was kind of complaining about a little bit. Then he stopped. He looked at his wife. He said, "You realize this is a problem?" He said, "But it's a rich person's problem." He said, "It's a wealthy man's problem, because we've come from places where people don't have food. Period. We come from places where there is no refrigerator, where there is no freezer, we've been in these places where people don't have anything. They don't never have the problem of having to throw away food because the refrigerator went bad." He said it's a wealthy man's problem. And it puts a different perspective of things. And we have to recognize here that Jesus is telling these disciples, he said, things are going to come to a place where it's bad, and that's the beginning of sorrows. But notice as we go through, and let me make sure I've got it through all of it. Verse number 9 now. When all of that is bad, notice what he said. "Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake." Religious persecution that will skyrocket, that will just intensify. I know that, again, when we think of things, and I'm not blaming us for this. We live in America. We only have an American mentality to things. It's no way for us to have a perception of stuff in other places. If you talk to most people in America, like us, we're to ask what kind of Christian persecution we have, well, you got to be careful who you talk to about Jesus. You know, they might get mad at you, or you might get a little fussed at on your job, or people might turn from you, or you try to witness somebody, and we're scared to witness because, you know, they might get mad and not talk to us no more. Might make it uncomfortable with the family. And that's how we think. I'm not picking on us, but that's how we think sometimes. You know, religious persecution is being shunned by a family or a friend, or being, you know, laughed at at work. But there's places that people live right now, right where, while we're right here today, there are people that if they're caught doing what we're doing right now, they would suffer physical abuse. They would suffer the confiscation of their homes and goods. And sometimes, and we even talked about this, you know, there's places that rules right now in China that you cannot convert a minor to a different religion other than the worship of their king, which applies to parents. Because your child's a minor, just because you're a parent, you don't have the right, you don't have the government's authority to teach your children about God. And if you do, they will come and take them away. Notice what he said. All these things, the beginning of sorrows, then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you. These things take place in the world in which we live today. They're not taking place yet in America. I do believe that one day these things will take place in America. We're seeing the change of the culture. We're seeing the change of the tolerance. Everyone talks a lot about tolerance, but the tolerance means the intolerance of Christianity. And so there's more suffering. There are people today, there are in our country today, there are people that have gone to court because their children are being taken away from them because they refuse to acknowledge their children's sexual identity. In other words, if you give birth to a son and he decides that he no longer is a male, that he's a female, if they do not call him by the gender, by the pronouns which they want, courts will order them to do that. That takes place. It's happening in countries that are very close to us. It's making its way into where we are. There's already times where people are losing things. What's that saying about Christianity? We're losing what we have. There's an urgency to us as Christians to move past the comfort of Christianity and step out and say it's time for us not to go to battle with people, but to carry a message to those in this world. There are people right now today that are growing up and they do not know anything, that there's any reason that their sexuality, their gender should be a problem to anyone else. We don't understand. They don't get it. They don't see it. They've never been taught the Bible. They don't have a biblical view of things. And they're not rebelling against God. They don't understand it. It's up to us as Christians to really stand for what we believe in, not to go to battle against everybody. We have to understand that it's our job now to hold truth, teach truth, to understand, to be able to give a biblical answer. You may encounter someone, I don't want to say this right now. You may encounter, and most likely will encounter someone in your lifetime that is a transgender. It is not your job, it is not your calling to attack them by that verbally or mentally or abusive. It's to build a relationship with that person that you earn the right to be heard about the gospel of Jesus Christ. The same as you would do with a person that's an alcoholic. The same that you would do with the person that's just a non-believer. The same that you would do with the person that has a drug addiction. The same that you would do with the person that has any other issue in their life. They are just people. And they're just learning what this world teaches. What Jesus says, because I'm going to lead up to something, he says, then shall they deliver you up. There's no tolerance for Christianity in this world. Go to some of these foreign countries that are communistic in their beliefs and try to make a stand for the Bible and things. There's persecution, there's imprisonment, there's confiscation, there's torture, there's suffering that takes place for that. And it's, as Christians, we must recognize these things that Jesus talked about, they take place in the world in which we live. But, you know, they took place back then too. And so the Jews suffered and Christians suffered. We'll start to see all of those things. Verse number 10 says this: then shall many be offended and shall betray one another and shall hate one another. In verse number 10, he starts to say there's going to come this time of betrayal. And because the suffering and the affliction and the persecution is so severe, people will start to betray one another. Think about the people that we have in this room right here tonight, and think about what we say all the time. We are a church what? We are a church family. Think about the persecution and the suffering being put on so severe that we sell each other out. Turn each other in. That's what Jesus is talking about. That's a time where Christians are facing what's going to happen through all of these things is there's going to come a deciphering of genuine Christians. You know, when I studied and I was reading about the church and Christianity in Russia before all of the before the wall came down and stuff like that, when it cost you to be a Christian, when it was really, you know, one of the things the pastor said there is that, their Christians were genuine. They were real. They knew that because they had already paid a price to be a Christian. What does it cost us to be a Christian in America? Most, when I talk to people, I've never sat down with someone and they said, you know, preacher, I want to come to church, but every time I do, you know, my family just attacks me. I didn't know a man. I didn't know this for years. When I was younger, I knew a man. I found out later that his wife would physically attack him when he would try to go to church. I never knew it. Like I said, I was little. He was faithful. He had a position in the church, and he was faithful. And he actually told the pastor one time, he said, look, I want to apologize. I was not here this particular day. He said, I was walking out the door. He said, Pastor, my wife literally ripped my shirt off and clawed my back. That was over 30-some years. I've never sat down with someone and had to say, I understand that. I mean, it's a cost for you. The reason I'm asking you, what does it cost us today to be a Christian? Most of the things I say, preacher, you know, I'd really like to be there on Wednesday night, but you know, it's just hard. Now, y'all don't understand because y'all came. It was hard for y'all, but y'all got here. You know, it's just, and if they would just say it the way that it would, it's just not convenient. That's most of the excuses for us not being in. It conflicts with the schedule. It conflicts with something else. It's just not convenient. What it cost us to be Christians in America is convenience. But when all of these things really come out and persecution comes out, what it will cost is something real. And if we're not willing to be inconvenienced for Christ, we certainly will not suffer for Christ. And these disciples are learning that, hey, there's going to come a time when real persecution is going to take place, and we need to recognize that this is coming to the world in which we live. It's coming to the country in which we live. He says in verse number 11, again, he repeats something. Many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. This is the second time in this study already that Jesus has warned the disciples about being deceived. I think one of those reasons is when you're suffering, when you're in persecution, you want to believe anything that brings you. As I told you, this is one of the books about POWs, and some of them, you know, they were put in positions to turn on their fellow soldiers. It was rare that they would actually do it, but they would be sold a bill of goods. I mean, they would always be told, if you do this, then we'll do this, and we'll make things right. You want to believe those things, but they had to realize you cannot be deceived by that. This is the enemy. And so for Christ, the second time, he's putting in there, it says, look, I want you to know, do not be deceived. Verse number 12, and because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Now, I've heard this talked about all of my life, and I understand it. We're seeing something different. When he talks about this, iniquity shall abound, he's talking about an explosion, almost like it seems like there's going to be a sudden just a complete turning. And for, you know, for as long as any person in this room has been alive, you've heard people talk about it's just worse now than it's ever been any other time in history. I always say, don't forget Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, God once destroyed a whole city. Don't forget Noah, who God once destroyed the entire world because of iniquity. This is not as bad as it's ever been. It might be as bad as it's been in your lifetime. But when he's talking here, this iniquity abounding, what he's really talking about is there's going to come a time where people are not ashamed of their sin. And I was listening to someone talk about the Constitution and things, and another person saying, do you understand that when the Constitution was written and stuff like that, they never would have understood anything about gay, lesbian, transsexual. You know, they didn't have laws in place about those things because they didn't understand, or they never thought it'd be an issue. And you know, now it's not that these things exist, it's that these things are coming in places where you have to celebrate. And what I mean by that is this. Give you an illustration. There was a school, I don't remember, I think it was a college, and there was a teacher that was, you know, kind of put in the place where the school wanted to celebrate that movement, and that's a big thing right now, that movement, that whole sexual movement is just a big, big thing. And the school wanted to celebrate. Now, one of the teachers like this, I'm not going to celebrate it, but I'm not going to fight you on it. You know, just, I'm neutral. It wasn't neutral. They just said, I'm not going to. And they said, no, you don't understand. You will celebrate it, or you will not be a part of this. And what happens when your employment says you must not just tolerate these things, you must celebrate these things. You must be a part of this. You must share in our celebration of it, in our parade, or whatever that type thing would be. What happens when your employment, and some of you sit back and you're like, oh, I ain't worried about it. I'm already on Social Security. I got my retirement. No. I want you to understand something. They come for everybody. Did you know that right now there are court cases, things happening where Christian colleges are being sued, where they're being pressed because they discriminate against people that have different religions? In other words, if we were a Christian college, we could not hire someone, or could not refuse to hire somebody because they do not believe the Bible. It's happening in our country. If they're going that far with them, they'll eventually come for us. You know, I've always joked about it, and I hope y'all understand it's partially a joke, it's partially real. Y'all may be having fun to get me out of jail one day. We went crazy. We went Facebook Live. You know, we just throw our stuff out there for everybody to see. Come arrest the pastor one day because he's preaching stuff like he's preaching tonight. You know, and we can make light of that to a degree, but we understand that one day this is a real issue. That the things that we've said tonight could be classified eventually as hate speech. Because we believe what the Bible teaches about sexuality. People are no longer ashamed of these things. They are flaunting these things. And the shame is being placed on those that do not agree with them. Yet Jesus is telling the disciples all these things will happen. And when he talks about the love of many shall wax cold, is that, you know, there's no compassion for people that have a different way. In other words, they preach tolerance, but it's an intolerance for Bible-believing people that practice it. There's another idea that's coming around, is that we can believe, we can teach, we can say whatever we want in here, but we cannot take it out there and actually live. In this world in which we're living, there's going to be some things, but the Bible says this, but he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved. Jesus is not saying here that that's how you earn your salvation. What he's saying is, remember, there's persecution. There's being put up, people being put into place to deny their Christ, their Bible, their salvation, their beliefs. In other words, you come into a place and say, look, if you'll step away from this, if you'll not take a stand on these things, and we'll back off the pressure that we're putting on you right now, all those things. And he says, those that endure to the end. If that's the people that you know, that's the ones that's real. That's legit. That's people that scatter. You understand Christianity, it might cost us convenience right now. It's going to move beyond that. And it's going to decipher those that are real. being faithful, being true. Verse number 14 is our last verse. It says, "In this gospel the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." And so Jesus is kind of going out. Remember what Jesus does when he's going to ascend up into heaven? He gives them what's called the Great Commission. "Go ye into all the world." So he's telling them, "Hey guys," and you got to think about the disciples. You know, they're talking about this destruction of the temple. They're talking about Jesus coming back, and they're saying, "When are these things going to come? And when? What's the sign of it all?" And notice what he keeps telling them: it's going to be a long unfolding of things. And we see all this stuff happening around. I want you to know something: it doesn't mean that Christ is coming back tomorrow. No man knows the day or the hour. We do not know. We can see the signs of things turning. We can see the signs of things changing. But just because if we start having earthquakes happening more in America, and we start having some pestilence in America, and diseases in America, and that doesn't mean everything changed. Why? Because these things have been taking place all around the world around us. What it means is, we know the end is coming. And that's the urgency which we should strive to teach, to share, to be real, to reach this world, not to fight against this world, but to reach this world with. And that's why we want to go into all the world. We want to find our part. And as a church, we're trying now to find our part. What part of the world are we going to send somebody to? What part of the world are we going to take up this command, this teaching, and send someone to teach the Bible, to do these things? What part of the world are we going to be a part of doing that? We have it in different places, and we're seeing that. And so he's saying this message is going to be preached in all the world, and that is part of our mission as a church, is to not just have the gospel here in our little section of the world, but to get this gospel message out into all the world. Not to hope that someone else will take it, but we need to pray about how do we get it out. How do we take it from here outside into this community in which we have, and how do we take it outside of this community into other parts of the world? And that's our job, is to pray for that, to seek that, to find out, and hopefully one day to be sending people out from this church to carry the gospel, not just to our community, but beyond into other places where we go. All right, that's what we have for you tonight. That's the first 14 verses that come through there. Jesus start to unload these things, and it's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger as we go. Thank you, Landon. Appreciate it. We're going to close out in prayer. I'm going to ask Terry Madley to do that for us tonight. But Terry, if you would, just lead us in prayer.
Father, come before thee.